politics and dynamics, these are complex decisions. They're not normally based on just one point agenda. You know, it's these decisions are multi-dimensional, multi-layered, generally speaking.
Right.
So there could be lots of reasons I could think of.
Is there no possibility that they did it out of a blunder?
Because no, there's no possibility.
I doubt
at
this
all,
is
man.
This is I mean, very childish and naive.
They're spending way too much money to be able to make these kind of silly mistakes.
And it's right in your face. It's not like something you have to go and dig, right? It's right in your face. It's there. You're watching it. You watch the transmission for a week. So all you need is like a 9-to-5 guy, you know, on your payroll. Just sit there, you know, watch. And when you see these words, you know, just put it on a piece of paper. Very rogue, very simple.
They have computers that can just do that now.
Yeah, I wanted to add something just before the program ends. And that is my own personal humble opinion is that we should be very, very careful. And this is a warning to the whole world. Right. The first part is that the leader of the Muslim Ummah, Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has openly declared that the United States of America is spiraling downwards towards a crash. It has already begun. He said a similar thing about the Zionist regime, that the downfall of the Zionist regime has begun and it will continue to spiral downwards until it crashes. He has said the same thing about America. This is what we're seeing. If you put all the connections together, whether it's Trump still so many months later still saying that the elections are rigged, and for example, the recent attack on the Hashd al-Shaabi on the border of Iraq and Syria, which the American Congress has said is a very inflammatory and something that Biden should have not done, right? And then the seizure of websites. Which is the seizure of freedom of speech, the seizure of opinion, the seizure of ideas. The United States of America is starting to act like a maniac, and it is becoming a very serious threat to the stability of the entire world.
I mean, it already was, but now it's...
No, but now it's just blatant, right? Mm. I have never heard that the United States ever seized somebody else's news media outlets. You know, I mean, this is just crazy. And now you're attacking countries left and right. You're closing down websites and you're sanctioning people for multiple decades. It's really just like the Zionist regime is a very serious threat to the West Asian region. The United States of America is becoming a very serious threat to the entire
world.
And
actually, that's a good point. Let the record show that this happened during Biden's administration, because if this kind of thing had happened during Trump's time, everybody would be like,
everybody
well,
was mentally
you know,
prepared, right?
Yeah, Trump is going. It's Trump is Trump, right? Crazy. But no, this is Biden doing this. So, again, is this not a mistake on their part in the sense that this is going to create more?
Totally. It's going
curiosity,
to backfire.
Right?
Oh, you have no clue. You know, we're already looking at these even secular chat media outlets. You know, I'm not going to name them, but, you know, I've been following them. People who have nothing to do with Islam or Shia Islam or Iran, you know, they're taking a notice of it in that free world. There is such a big opposition of what the United States has done. It has actually, if you notice, this action of the United States of America has endorsed what we have been saying for years, that they silence the word of logic, they silence the word of truth. Anything they don't like, they silence, right? Anything that does not chime with their own agenda, they silence. We've been saying it. Sometimes it was a bit tricky to prove it. Now it's right in your face. Now you don't need to prove it, right? It has backfired big time, and you'll see. Every time they have tried to suppress the innocent people and oppressed people of the world, it actually sooner or later backfired for them, right? Yeah. I've got so many of those examples which you don't have time for. Yeah. Same thing is going to happen in cyber world and in electronic media world now. They're suppressing, they're silencing it. You know, somebody who was doing it half-heartedly, now they're going to do it with more passion because it's already proven to them that they were doing it right.
That's all we have time for, unfortunately. A fascinating discussion, inshallah, which we will be continuing, inshallah, next time. From myself and from our honorable guests, we bid you assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Thank you so much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Viewpoints. You can log on to our website at parstoday.com, and you can email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Until next time, goodbye.
A symphony of nature. It's taking my breath away. I'm so blessed out here today. Yeah, Allah.
A moment before the break of dawn, life in the Niger begins with the rhythm of the calm, small, brilliant waves of the lakes of Mali. Calm and silent, yet glistening with life, this magical place lies right in the middle of the vast, burning desert of Africa. As the sun peaks over the horizon, life's current gains momentum. The inhabitants, mostly farmers, begin their day early, making their living by selling goods, and one can see more people starting off their working day as well. Residents of the beach are rather laid back. Men congregate to play games together and listen to the radio. Life is simple here, much like the type of goods the people sell. As simple, perhaps, as preparing a cup of tea.
Banned books.
Not far away, mothers are working too. As they work, they sing their songs of legend that tell traditional tales of their history. Folklore of kings and lesser rulers with their faces hidden behind wooden masks. They had won battles against beasts and great wizards, and they had discovered great treasures, all in the name of an expansive, mystical land called Mali. Not all of Mali's tales, however, are of legend. This country has survived the intrusion of a number of colonial empires, which occupied Western Africa. It is also a land that has experienced thriving times in the past. But here in the 21st century, Mali is devastated. Once a land of significant architectural development that denoted an accomplished civilization, these mementos are fading and might one day be all but forgotten. Villagers, seemingly unchanged by historical events of the past, live next to the remnants of centuries-old kings' palaces.
In Mali, Senegal, and other countries, including Ghana and Niger, governments were feudal and consecutive royal dynasties ruled over this region. This place that you see here is the government's court. It is a royal's property that belongs to Bambara dynasty.
Dagon tribe is one of the most mystifying tribes in Mali. Some believe they are in regular contact with extraterrestrial beings. They are deeply knowledgeable about the stars and heavens. Deserted but resilient homes of the Dagons stand deep in the heart of the Bandiagara land. Among several such villages, one or two allow visitor access, while the rest are categorized as a forbidden zone for any non-native.
Did you know that these small houses belong to pygmies who built them more than 2,000 years ago?
Do you mean the tribes of short people?
Yes, the pygmies were forced to emigrate from here and move to Central Africa, to a country which is now involved in a horrible civil war. About 1,000 years ago, the Dagons migrated to this area. They were also natives of Bandiagara, but there were theological differences with the Muslim community there, and the Dagons didn't want to abandon their traditional customs, so they decided to emigrate and resettle within this territory to form their own society. This new land proved a very good place for them to live and grow. The environment meant that they were protected from wild animals, and hostile tribes could not effectively attack them either. These are the reasons, it is said, that the Dagons took over this territory and ousted the pygmy population, who were the original builders of these houses.
The meaning of the black means the mud, the soil, latel, and then the white means the water, and the skies, and then the red means the sacrifice blood, animals, and that is the sun over there.
They said they should be there to be away, to see enemies coming from a distance, because sitting there you can see back of the plain land. And then if there is enemy coming, you can see, and they can't come from your up, they will fall down.
How could they get, you know, the food and the water from?
They get their food and water, they come to hunt, and then they go up there back. Enemies will not be fighting you all the time of the day.
It could be difficult for them, you know, just to coming down.
That is why today you see them living downstairs.
Yes.
The people of this village are origin of this place, but the present people of today, nothing belongs to them, but it, you know, it's from great grandfather
generation
to
after generation,
generation after generation, and they are all here to protect it.
It was a time of long, dark nights, but brilliant days full of optimism and accomplishment. Legendary civilizations that were no less than those of the great ancient civilizations. Tribes that built impenetrable resistance could not be dominated by their enemies, and they prevailed. Faces of heroes were carved proudly on totems as mementos and as symbols of strength and fortitude. One might imagine these civilizations as primitive, but in many ways, they were not. Timbuktu is a gem in the heart of the African desert, a legendary city first established as a major commercial center in West Africa 900 years ago. Today, it is remote and desolate. Islam became prominent in Mali in the 1300s, under the leadership of Mansa Musa, who built 5 mud-brick mosques, creating the beginning of an empire. The religion took its inhabitants out of paganism to the worship of one almighty God. prior to Islam, the mystical traditions of Sufism were imbued in Malian society, and while Islam penetrated the indigenous consciousness of the people, local customs and beliefs persisted also. The period produced economic prosperity and attracted many Muslim scholars and traders. Today, Muslims make up 90% of Mali's population. Until recently, its society lived in relative peace with one another, tolerant of minority religions, and integrated into societal norms. Sufism in Mali has been the origin of many defining moments that includes successful resistance against colonialism. These are numerous sects in Mali Sufism. One of the most important and most followed is Tijuana. But all of these sects are devoted followers of the Ahlul Bayt, people of the house of the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, which includes the Imams of Islam.
Go to work there to see the people, to talk with the people, to don't make it girl.
To solve the problem
to
peacefully.
Solve problem for the peace, not for the girl. Yeah, to talk with them, and then Mali will be nice country with them, to talk to them, not for the fighting. The Muslims pray every time. They are good at it.
What about the French soldiers? There are plenty of them here.
French soldiers. Many is easy here.
The presence of the French in Africa, especially in Mali, is a story of centuries of attempts at imperial conquest and colonization.
From 1905 to 1932, here has been the seat of a French ruler. Now, what had happened during these 27 years in these houses?
And what decisions were made?
God knows.
In the majority of their captured colonies in Western Africa, the French have spread radicalism, which adopts the belief that one race is superior over another race of people, and it is this radicalism that ensures colonies fulfill their responsibilities towards their lords. French soldiers are committed to fight for France's imperial interests, and the people of Mali must share their earnings and wealth with their colonial lord. The statue of Louis Archinard, a revered general of France's conquest of Mali in the 1800s, looks in the direction of Niger Beach in a corner of the historic city of Sego as a daily reminder that Malians are under French control. Mali gained its independence in 1960. However, slavery has persisted to this day. The French are well known throughout their own history as world-class enforcers of slavery, oppression, and even genocide. And so, for the people of Mali, there is likely to be no freedom from slavery when this French intervention changes form. When the war ends in Mali and everything reverts back to normal, lords remain lords, and slaves must continue their slavery. will become history soon enough, and the period of French colonialism will also one day end to make way for so-called democratic government. But the benefits reaped by the conquerors from natural resources will continue covertly, leaving only the crumbs for the native population. Mali possesses a wealth of vital natural resources such as petroleum, gas, and uranium, used for atomic weaponry, and the functioning of nuclear reactors. It provides abundant wealth to large French corporations, such as ARBA. ARBA, founded in 1958 in Paris, had always been at the top of French nuclear negotiations. The company is involved wherever African uranium is mined, and Mali is no exception. Tragically, while French politicians and business moguls enjoy their spoils and media spin, and a new government favorable to French interests is formed for Mali to complete its recolonization, the people of Mali will pay the ultimate price, that of widespread poverty forced upon them in order to guarantee control over their resources. It's difficult to imagine the horror these people must have witnessed in the throes of civil war, neighbor warring against neighbor, brother against brother. It all must have made little sense to those in the firing line. The people's expectations would have been vastly different from the terrible reality that ensued. Who will bind the nation's wounds once this is all over? Disintegrated economy, starving infants, poverty and unemployment directs most everybody towards violence as a last resort, and especially when there are serious external motives. Tuaregs are nomadic tribes in the north of Mali. One can find Tuaregs eking out a living from Libya and Algeria to the north of Mali. They are a people who feel always deprived and ready to protest. After Mali's independence, Tuareg tribes became a target of the French colonists, who sought to motivate them against the central government and thereby to weaken the new government. A weak central government can be easily corrupted and taken over by a colonial power. This time, Arab allies of Western powers and manipulation of the petrodollars would serve to help hoist the blood-covered flag of Takfiri terrorists over captured territory. The modus operandi of these Takfiris is to first destroy buildings that belong to the Sufis that brought Islam to Africa and fought against colonialists. Takfiris are exceedingly brutal in their methods of spreading fear through decapitation, torture, and rape and murder, that it would frighten the Malians in a way that they will never forget. With the intrusion of foreign-sponsored terrorists and mercenaries, the future for Mali was laid out. Northern cities would fall one by one, and the Black Flag government would replace Malian government and would rule over Mali. The Malian army is not able to confront such a level of threat that worked its way closer to the capital moment by moment. The increasing fear of a Takfiri takeover would strongly encourage Malian authorities and its people to welcome past occupiers. The French army simply waited in the wings for their chance to act and return to recolonize Mali, only this time as the role of perceived savior. It would then proceed to expel the Takfiris and take over Mali's northern cities itself, one by one. Timbuktu, formerly the cultural capital of Western Africa, was attacked by the terrorist group Ansar al-Din, linked to Al-Qaeda, who saw their opportunity in the confusion following the military coup which ousted the former Malian government in 2012. Timbuktu became the training academy for Al-Qaeda terrorists. Today, Timbuktu is charged as the keeper of sacred scripts and treasures, which are under protection in selected libraries of the city. Once a cultural heritage burns in the fire of ignorance and prejudice, or is stolen and sold to private collectors, museums, or to London or Paris antique markets, the people no longer have that pillar of strength to lean on. It's as if a part of them has been taken and is now missing from their soul. And after that, their power to resist diminishes. Timbuktu's burnt books is the symbol of the rich and brave culture of the people who resisted against enemy attacks and threats of destruction of its antiquities for hundreds of years. Malians have been bent, but haven't broken. They have withstood countless invasions and persecutions, and all the while have kept their customs, culture, and religion. For the past 3 years alone, they have dealt with a government takeover, civil war, foreign terrorism, as well as local terrorism and rebellion, displacement of masses of people, government collapse, and destruction of the country's most endearing artifacts. Mali could be described as a failed state. The people have endured this traumatic experience, and there remains cautious optimism for the future. This is a testament to their strength of character. The country has lost some of its sovereignty. However, it is hard for one to be optimistic about the independent future of Mali. Already having lost some of its sovereignty to former colonial master France, Mali struggles both against foreign-sponsored terrorism and the relentless interference in its internal affairs by the West. Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight. The European Union will offer to remove a majority of post-Brexit checks on British goods entering Northern Ireland as it seeks to turn the page on the rancorous relationship with Boris Johnson. Up to 50% of customs checks on goods will be lifted, and more than half of the checks on meat and plants entering Northern Ireland would be abandoned under the bold offer from Brussels. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian journalist Daniel Buffy. The piece is titled, "EU Ready to Scrap Most Post-Brexit Checks on British Goods Entering Northern Ireland." European Union will offer to remove a majority of post-Brexit checks on British goods entering Northern Ireland as it seeks to turn the page on the rancorous relationship with Boris Johnson. Up to 50% of customs checks on goods will be lifted, and more than half the checks on meat and plants entering Northern Ireland would be abandoned under a bold offer from Brussels. The olive branch was extended on Wednesday, 13th of October, in defiance of the French government, which internally raised concerns about the proposed move by Maroš Šefčovič, the EU's Brexit commissioner. It comes after David Frost, Britain's Brexit minister, warned it would be a historic misjudgment if the European Union did not consider scrapping and replacing the existing Northern Ireland Protocol. The offer from Brussels on Wednesday is designed to answer this, and the Prime Minister's claim that 20% of all checks on the perimeter of the 27 member state European Union bloc are conducted at the regulatory border between Northern Ireland and the rest of the United Kingdom. In a further attempt to calm tensions, the European Union's Brexit Commissioner, Maroš Šefčovič, said the proposals are not being tabled on a take-it-or-leave-it basis and emphasized that he recognizes that the Northern Ireland Protocol has not worked well enough. A bone of contention remains between the two sides, however, in the form of a demand from Lord Frost that the European Court of Justice, the ECJ, loses its role as the arbiter of EU law being applied in Northern Ireland. Maroš Šefčovič has not included any proposal on the role of the EU court in his offer, and sources said there was shock in Brussels at how the issue had become an apparent British red line in recent days. In a speech on Tuesday in Lisbon, Portugal, Frost said he believes the European Union had been too hasty in dismissing the court's role as a side issue. The reality is the opposite, he said. The role of the European Court of Justice and the European Union institutions in Northern Ireland create a situation where there appears to be no discretion about how provisions in the protocol are implemented. The Commission's decision to launch infraction proceedings against us earlier this year at the very first sign of disagreement shows why these arrangements won't work in practice. Lord Frost, who was embroiled in a late-night Twitter spat with Ireland's Foreign Minister Simon Coveney over his position on the European Court of Justice earlier this week, added, "But it is not just about the court, it is about the system of which the court is the apex, the system which means the European Union can make laws which apply in Northern Ireland without any kind of democratic scrutiny or discussion. Even now, as the EU considers possible solutions, there is an air of it saying, we have decided what's best for you and will now implement it. None of this we can now see will work as part of a durable settlement. Indeed, without new arrangements in this area, no protocol will ever have the support across Northern Ireland it needs to survive." Lord Frost also reiterated his threat to trigger Article 16, effectively suspending parts of the Northern Ireland Protocol if the European Union fails to deliver. "It is our responsibility to safeguard peace and prosperity in Northern Ireland, and that may include using Article 16 if necessary," he said. "We would not go down this road gratuitously or with any particular pleasure." Beyond lifting an European Union prohibition on British sausages and garden plants, the EU's Brexit Commissioner, Maroš Šefčovič's intention is to reduce all so-called sanitary and phytosanitary checks to what is regarded in Brussels as an extremely low level. The European Union will also vastly reduce the level of custom paperwork by broadening the division of what products from Britain will be regarded as not at risk of entering the wider single market from Northern Ireland. The Commission will also suggest ways in which Northern Ireland's stakeholders can have a voice in European Union decision-making process in recognition of the democratic deficit. Maris Sefcovic is understood to have faced heavy resistance from within the European Union power structure over his package. France, in particular, fresh from a bruising encounter with the United Kingdom over fishing licenses, had warned of the risk to the single market posed by lifting of controls. But Maris Sefcovic won the internal argument and will further signal to Lord Frost that the proposals are not being tabled on a take-it-or-leave-it basis. He will instead publicly ask Lord Frost to work with them to flesh out his ideas on a new bespoke arrangement.
This is Foresight. A program on how to worship Allah. Today's great tip: what are the great secrets of this spiritual journey towards Allah and its relation with our ubudiyah, our servitude of Allah? Now, dear listeners, we're talking about the great secrets of this spiritual journey towards Allah and how it directly relates to our ubudiyah, our servitude of Allah. Now, of course, as we know, our servitude of Allah is in reality this very journey which we take towards Allah. It's interesting, we find in chapter number 4, verse number 100 of the Holy Quran, where Allah the Most Exalted says, "And whoever leaves his house, migrating towards Allah and His Messenger, and then death overtakes them, their reward is indeed with Allah." Now, talking about this migration, we find that Imam Khomeini, the esteemed, he says that the formal migration, or the form of migration, is this corporeal migration from the formal house to the Kaaba, or to the shrines of the holy men, the near ones to Allah. So what he's saying is that you have this basic formal physical migration, which in one sense is the migration from your own house to, for example, the Holy Kaaba or the shrines of the infallible imams or these revered personalities. This is the physical migration. But then Imam Khomeini talks about the spiritual migration. And he says that this spiritual migration is the going out of the house of the soul and the house of this world towards the house of Allah and the house of the Messenger of Allah. Now here, when he says the house of Allah, in reality, he's talking about Allah himself, not necessarily the house of Allah. The actual text says that it is towards Allah and his messenger. So this spiritual migration, dear friends, is very important, and most probably the Holy Quran in this verse is talking about this spiritual migration, even though the physical migration is also being spoken about. But the physical migration, for example, from your house to the houses of God or to the lands of God, this is not limited to this physical migration, but the level up is a spiritual migration, right? And this spiritual migration is to leave the house of the I and the egotism and the soul itself and move towards Allah and his messenger.
Listeners of the program Foresight, my name is Muhammad. Today I'm going to read to you the English translation of an excerpt from Munajatul Arifi. Please stay with me. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. My God, tongues fall short of attaining praise of you proper to your majesty. Intellects are incapable of grasping the core of your beauty. Eyes fail before gazing upon the glories of your face. And you have assigned to your creatures no way to know you, save incapacity to know you.
Welcome back, dear listeners, in continuation to what we were saying, which was that we should leave the house of the self and have a spiritual migration towards Allah, towards the messenger of Allah, and towards the authorities which have been placed and ordained by Allah, such as the infallible imams. Of course, we had said that the spiritual migration is not the only migration, for there is also a physical migration. And both the physical and spiritual migration play an integral role in our ubudiyah, our servitude of Allah. For the ubudiyah and the servitude of Allah is in reality the road towards the migration and the Mi'raj and the Hijra towards Allah the Mighty, the Exalted. But dear friends, something that we have to keep in mind, which is very important and is considered a barrier and an obstacle in our ubudiyah, our servitude of Allah, and in the different levels of the servitude of Allah, is that as long as one's soul has an inclination, a love an attractiveness, a magnetism, a desire towards one's self and towards egotism and selfishness and self-centeredness and self-worship and self-idolization, this soul is not conducting a journey. This soul is not conducting a spiritual migration. This kind of a soul, which is focused totally on the I, is inclined towards the me and myself. This kind of soul will never understand the beauties and the profundities and the inner dimensions of ubudiyah and the servitude of Allah. And so, dear friends, as long as there are residues of oneness in the salik's eyes, in the spiritual wayfarer's eyes, in the eyes of those who want to attain a perfect and complete ubudiyah, servitude of Allah, as long as there is a residue of oneness, and as long as the walls of your own town and the adhan announcing selfishness have not yet disappeared, you are regarded as a staying one, a one who has no movement, a one who is still in their place and is not regarded as a traveler or one conducting migration. And so this is something which is very important and we must keep in mind, dear friends, is that if we want to level up our ubudiyah, if we want to strengthen and give power to our servitude of Allah, and we really want to make it the best kind of ubudiyah, we are going to have to release this I-ness, and we're going to have to move away from this oneness of the me. And of course, we're going to have to break down the walls of this town called myself, and we're going to have to stop announcing the adhan, the call to the prayer of selfishness and egotism. For if we live in this town called me, and we continue to proclaim the adhan, the call to the prayers of the I, we will never be able to move forward. Matter of fact, we will most probably start to move backwards, away from Allah. And as we move closer to the I, of course we will move farther away from our ultimate destination, which is Allah, the Mighty, the Exalted.
IRIB English Radio.
Our website is parstoday.com.
Now we invite you to listen to Sheikh Salim Yusuf Ali.
We have a body and we have a soul. Oftentimes when we forget about the value of the soul and we forget about the fact that this is what's going to take us into success in the hereafter, what we're doing is we are squandering something which is very valuable. It's a very precious thing that we have. And let me give you an analogy. Imagine that you were given a big stack of $100 bills. Okay, like, let's say, you know, I don't know, big stack, this big, $100 bills. Now, there's a number of things you can do with that stack of $100 bills. Right, you can take it, you can admire it, right? You can give it as gifts to your fellow brothers and sisters on Eid. Right? But most people aren't going to do that, right? Now, let's say you're... you have this big stack and you realize that it's gotten cold, all right? And you're looking for something to make a fire out of. And you look around, you don't see any firewood. Okay, you find a lighter, and you have a big stack of $100 bills, right? You're like, okay, it's cold. I want to feel hot. Let me take the bills and let me light the bills on fire and make a fire out of them. Right? So now you're burning the $100 bills and you're making fire out of them. Now most of you, if you were to even think about it, you'd be in shock. You'd be like, how could you possibly ever think about using, forget about $100 bills, even if it was like a stack of $1 bills, right? You never burn $1 bills. Okay, what's the problem here? The problem is that, okay, the first of all, how long is that fire gonna last, right? Maybe a couple minutes, maybe maximum 10 minutes, and then all those bills are gonna be burnt. You don't have any left. Second of all, and this is the bigger problem, is that the $100 bills are meant to be used for something a lot more important. Just take one of those, go down to your local Walmart, or we don't shop at Walmart, right? So let's go to Target, right? And pick up some artificial logs, whatever they make these days, and bring that. And then use the rest of the change to buy some coffee, and then keep that rest of the money invested for your college, right? So the point is that that's just not at all a smart thing to use the bills for. Because they're a lot more valuable than to be used in such a silly way. Now that's just an analogy for us to think about, right? But at the end of the day, it's still a material amount of money. A big stack of bills, what is it? $1 million bucks, 10 million bucks? When it comes to the human being, that soul that we have is so precious. It's so precious that Allah connects it to Himself. He says, min ruhi. And Allah is infinite, right? So the value of the soul is infinite as well, too.
Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Foresight. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. Until another episode and another great tip, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 41 meters, 7410 kilohertz for Indian subcontinent. And FM, 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Heartbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Badr 5, and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.